October, many moons ago. We are all treaty people. That was the tagline of a public education campaign that ran across Canada a few years ago. So how does that important phrase relate to this week's Abandoned Manitoba? Gordon Goldsborough is here to explain. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadia.
So how does that line, we are all treaty people, relate to the abandoned site that we're talking about today?
Well, because the site we're going to talk about is actually one of the places where one of the treaties that is incumbent on all of us was signed. So I think it's a very significant spot.
And what's that place?
It's a place called Manitoba House.
Okay. Now, so before we get to that place, tell us a little bit more about treaties.
Well, they're basically a written agreement between the Crown, and at the time this particular treaty was signed, that was Queen Victoria, and the First Nations of this region. And it basically allowed the people who are starting to arrive in large numbers here the right to settle and to make a living. And so the premise was that both sides signed on to the treaty and therefore bound by its terms. And that's still the case today. People sometimes think that treaties only apply to one side. But no, we are all treaty people, and I think that's a good tagline for it.
How many treaties are there?
Well, in the post-Confederation period, after Manitoba joined Confederation, for example, in 1870, there were seven treaties in sort of that immediate period. But only five of them pertain to the sort of the boundaries of present-day Manitoba. And of those five, three of them were actually signed within the provincial area, Treaty 1, Treaty 2, and Treaty 5.
So what are the differences between these treaties?
Well, basically, they cover different land areas. So Treaty 1, for instance, covers the area here in Winnipeg. It covers sort of the south and eastern part of what became Manitoba. Treaty 2, on the other hand, dealt with the other portion of the southern part. So just to give you an idea, I guess, of the sort of the boundaries of it, of Treaty 2, and that's the one we're focusing on, it covers sort of the middle part of the Interlake, so communities like Ashern and Arberg. It covers the southwestern part of Manitoba, so Deloraine, Boisevain, Melitta, Souris, Verdun, Brandon. Going up further north, you get Russell, Dauphin, Gilbert Plains, Roblin, and then it goes as far as Winnipegosis. Doesn't quite get to Swan River, because that's another treaty area. So it really covers a vast area of southern, sort of western Manitoba.
So you said we're focusing on Treaty 2 today.
That's right.
What can you tell us about it?
The negotiations for Treaty 2 began at Lower Fort Garry. And in fact, the Treaty 1 was both negotiated and signed at Lower Fort Garry. And if you go to visit Lower Fort Garry today, you will see a plaque from the federal government that commemorates this signing. However, because Treaty 2 was not pertaining to the area where Lower Fort Garry was, although they did the negotiations, and in fact the negotiator on behalf of the Crown was the same, a fellow by the name of Wemyss Simpson, the actual signing of the ceremony, I didn't think it was appropriate to sign it at Lower Fort Garry because that wasn't part of its territory, so they instead moved to Manitoba House.
Now, what were the terms of the treaty?
Well, the people who were coming, the settlers, got the right to stay and to make a living. And in return, the Indigenous people, the First Nations that signed on, were given lands for their exclusive use. Those were the reserves. They were given things like farm equipment. They were given horses and buggies. They were given clothes. But the only sort of ongoing commitment was what they called an annuity payment. In other words, an annual payment. And at the very beginning, when it was first negotiated, that sum was $5 per person, which I suppose in 1871, when they signed Treaty 2, was a reasonable sum of money. Of course, it isn't today. And in fact, arguably, these payments haven't kept pace with inflation. So it's really more of just a paltry sum that the people are still given today. But that was the sum that they were to be given each and every year in perpetuity. Or as the expression was, as long as the sun shines, the grass grows, and the rivers flow.
Now, Treaty 2 was signed in Manitoba House. Where mm-hmm. exactly is Manitoba House?
Well, it's on the west shore of Lake Manitoba, south of the Narrows, at a fur trade post, basically of the Hudson's Bay Company, that was established in 1797. So a long time ago. And in fact, it was one of the first posts of the Hudson's Bay Company. One that we've talked about in this series before, Brandon House, is a little bit older. It was 1793. But this one is pretty soon afterwards. So a very important fur trading post for many, many years.
What did it look like?
Well, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of descriptions of the early days. And by the time we have a sort of an idea of what it looked like, it's already in decline. So we don't know if perhaps when it was in its heyday, it was bigger. But we have, for example, a diagram, sort of a sketch of it in 1891. There were six buildings there. The most substantial was the home of the chief trader for the facility. That was a 1.5-story log building. It had an attached kitchen where they would have done the cooking. And then there was surrounded by a garden where they would have grown food for their immediate use. And then a series of outbuildings. There was a trading store, for example, where they would have done the fur trading. And then a series of storage warehouses where they would have stored things like the trade goods, the furs. They would have stored provisions and various other things. And it was right on the shore of Lake Manitoba. So there was also a wharf there so that people who were arriving could come by water if they wished.
When did it close?
Well, as a fur trading facility, it closed in 1911. But this is at the end of a long period of decline. And the buildings were used for a number of years by families as a home, as a sort of a local store. In 1928, though, the majority of the buildings there were sold. And I'm told they were moved to a farm north of Alonza. Some of the parts, the kitchen, for example, was kept in the local area. And then some of the remaining logs were apparently used to build a church at nearby Reedy Creek. So there were some vestiges of it. But apparently throughout much of the 20th century, about all you could see was some depressions where the buildings had once stood.
What's the present state of Manitoba House?
Well, I was told about this site a few weeks ago, by someone who had attended one of my public presentations. And so I really wanted to see it for myself to be able to get a better sense of what it looked like. So I was heading to Dauphin last week, so I swung by the site. It's not far from present-day Kinnesota. And I found three buildings there that were in varying stages of falling down, basically. Several were made out of sort of dovetailed, sort of squared logs. So they did look like sort of old buildings, but they had modern elements. So they had, for example, more nails than I would expect an old building to have, because in the old days they didn't have a lot of nails. They had, and one building at least, had oriented strand board or chipboard, which is a modern material, definitely not fur trade era. And then there were some asphalt shingles on one of the buildings, again, definitely not period appropriate. So I was already a little suspicious. Then what I found when I did some digging to find out more about it in a local history book, I found that, in fact, in the mid-1970s, some local people working under the auspices of the Manitoba Métis Federation had actually built a replica of Manitoba House. So I suspect what you see there today is that replica. It was built according to original techniques and as much as possible with original materials, but it is not the original Manitoba House. So worthwhile seeing, but not authentic in that true sense.
Does it have any official designation as a historic site?
Well, there's the surprising thing, I think. I had assumed, I suppose, that, you know, given its significance to the signing of one of the major treaties, you know, and the fact that there is a plaque at Lower Fort Garry that commemorates Treaty 1, that Treaty 2 would have similar status. There'd be some kind of plaque at least there, a provincial plaque or a federal plaque, and there's nothing. As far as I know, there has been absolutely no commemoration. There is a grassroots effort that I've heard things about where they're trying to see about getting it some kind of official designation, but it has nothing now. In fact, I'm hoping that by drawing attention to it here, you know, maybe it might bring the requisite public attention.
Well, I'm glad that you did bring attention to it here. So thank you so much for this.
You're welcome, Nadja.
What about next week?
Well, I thought that, you know, given the uncertainties we have right now in postal delivery, and we worry about, you know, our letters not being delivered on time, I thought it might be interesting to talk about a collection of letters here in Manitoba that have been waiting to be delivered for 160 years.
No way.
Absolutely.
I love how you're tying abandoned Manitoba into current affairs. Gordon, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons ago.